Our next case this morning is number 053462, Stephen Arnold against the Commissioner of Social Security. Mr. Schultz.
May it please the Court, Your Honors, Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, Stephen Arnold. In this case, plaintiff's claim focuses on the ALJ's failure to properly consider the testimony and affidavits of the plaintiff's neighbors and friends. Two of them testified at the hearing, taking up 17 pages of transcript in the administrative record. And two of those two people, as well as two other neighbors, provided affidavits. I believe there were 17 or 13 pages of affidavit providing details concerning the claimant's limitations. One of the primary errors is that the ALJ adopted the residual functional capacity assessment of Dr. Stevens, who testified at the hearing. But Dr. Stevens made it very clear in several places during the hearing that she did not take into consideration the testimony of these witnesses, that she felt it was her job only to testify concerning the objective medical evidence, but that she understood that the ALJ could consider the witness testimony, and in fact that the ALJ should consider the witness testimony. But in adopting Dr. Stevens' opinion, the administrative law judge does not explain why the testimony and evidence from these witnesses doesn't provide a basis for finding greater limitations than Dr. Stevens indicated.
Perhaps you could elaborate a little bit on that. Why do you think the testimony of these lay people was so important? What did it really add to the judge's estimation of your client's medical situation?
Well,
disability situation, to be more precise.
Yes, sir. As you're aware, Mr. Arnold suffered from a traumatic brain injury.
Yes.
And although he provided some testimony concerning his ability to perform the self-employment auto mechanic work that he did out of his garage, the witnesses provided much more detail concerning the lack of frustration tolerance that Mr. Arnold had, that they had personal experience seeing him working on something for 5 minutes and then taking a break. Or in one case, Mr. Coletta testified that Mr. Arnold tried to get an oil filter off of a car. He couldn't do it, and he left. Mr. Coletta was waiting for the job to be done, and Mr. Arnold just left and went into the house and stayed there for several hours because he gets too frustrated and can't continue with his work.
Now, is there any? How does the medical evidence in the record corroborate what these friends and neighbors saw? I mean, is there medical what does the medical evidence say that really corroborates their perspective from your point of view?
Well, the medical evidence doesn't have to actually corroborate the severity of the symptoms. I mean, that's clear in the law. Social Security ruling 96-7P makes clear that if there's a medically determinable impairment which can cause the symptoms at some level, mm-hmm. in this case, inability to tolerate stress, low frustration level, low productivity, that the severity, in determining the severity of those symptoms, the entire record has to be considered, including the third-party statements.
So there doesn't have to be medical evidence. I understand that.
Yes, sir.
The thrust of my inquiry really is what these people saw compatible or not compatible with the rest of the record evidence. I'm somewhat surprised that you place as much emphasis as you do simply on the statements of the friends and neighbors.
Okay.
What I'm trying to find out from you is, can you make the case on the record taken as a whole, not just this evidence,
yes,
that this fellow simply can't manage to work and gainful employment?
Yes, sir.
That's really your problem, is it? You see it, that's his problem. He just can't go to work every day.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And stay there and focus on the work at hand. Well, Dr. Hoffman, following the hearing, the ALJ sent the claimant for a psychological evaluation with Dr. Hoffman. And Dr. Hoffman provided the opinion that the claimant was markedly limited in the ability to withstand work pressures. So his opinion was consistent with the opinions of the third parties.
Well, wait a second. That was based on questions from you based on the neighbor's statements. Isn't that right?
Well,
that wasn't a clinical observation or any sort of a medical conclusion of Dr. Hoffman. He was confronted with the statements from the neighbors and on that basis said that he had some limitations to responding to normal work pressures.
That's correct. And that's part of the whole issue in the case is that Dr. Stevens didn't consider the witness testimony. Dr. Hoffman did, and the ALJ was required to. And in considering that evidence, Dr. Hoffman said, Mr. Arnold is markedly limited in his ability to withstand work pressures. So the ALJ should have made a credibility determination as to the third-party statements, because if credible, then Dr. Hoffman's opinion should have been adopted. If not credible, then perhaps Dr. Stevens' opinion could have been adopted. But the ALJ made no credibility finding concerning this extensive evidence by the third party.
Well, it wasn't really an issue of credibility, but an issue of the weight to give to those statements, wasn't it? I mean, the ALJ didn't reject them as not credible, but noted that they were part of the record, but chose not to give them significant weight.
Well, I do believe that would be a credibility finding. If he chose not to believe them, he should have found them not credible.
Those are two different inquiries. A rejection of testimony or evidence as not credible is different from acceptance of the evidence, but simply not according its significant weight.
I would like to point out that the ALJ actually mischaracterized the evidence provided by these third parties. He mentions their testimony in two sentences. And at page 25 of the record, he says that the third party statements indicate difficulties with complex tasks, but do not indicate difficulties with simple tasks. And that's just plainly wrong on this record, because the ALJ asked both of the witnesses point blank whether they thought that Mr. Arnold could perform simple tasks, and he gave examples of working in a factory, moving things from one box to another. And both witnesses testified that no, Mr. Arnold could not even perform those simple tasks in their opinion. So the ALJ was wrong in his characterization of the evidence in this case.
Of course, there is, some evidence the other way. What do you think is the strongest evidence against your point of view, and what's your answer?
The strongest evidence against my point of view is Dr. Stevens' testimony at the hearing. But again, my answer is that she specifically said she did not consider the lay evidence, but that the ALJ should consider it. All of the rulings and regulations require the ALJ to consider this evidence, and the ALJ does not adequately deal with the evidence on this record. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. We'll hear now from Ms. Snow.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Mary Senno, and I represent the Commissioner of Social Security. As with all Social Security disability cases, the primary evidence that the agency considers when determining whether an individual is disabled is the medical evidence. And in this case, the most compelling evidence supporting the ALJ's decision was indeed the medical evidence. That is not to say that the ALJ didn't consider other evidence, such as Mr. Arnold's own testimony, the testimony and statements of the lay witnesses, or other probative factors in this case. He did so, and his thorough and well-reasoned decision is supported by substantial evidence, and it should be affirmed. Mr. Arnold asserts that the court should focus its attention primarily on the lay witness testimony, find it credible, and find him disabled based on the lay witness statements. However, the commissioner's position remains that the proper analysis is that which was conducted by the ALJ in this case. The ALJ viewed the witness statements and Mr. Arnold's subjective complaints in light of the overall record, and that was the proper thing to do. I would like to focus the court's attention first on the medical evidence, because the commissioner believes that that is the evidence that supports the ALJ's RFC assessment. And it certainly wasn't viewed in a vacuum by the ALJ or Dr. Stevens. Now, Dr. Stevens offered an opinion that Mr. Arnold was able to perform simple repetitive duties with low production standards and a low stress environment. And the ALJ's RFC finding mirrors that opinion. Dr. Stevens considered all of the medical evidence that was put forward at the hearing. She also was given the opportunity to review Dr. Hoffman's report, which was produced after the hearing based on Dr. Hoffman's examination of Mr. Arnold. And she said that her opinion remained unchanged. And she was presumably aware that Dr. Hoffman considered the witness statements in offering his opinion because he said so repeatedly. Dr. Desmond also examined Mr. Arnold, and he found that Mr. Arnold was capable of performing simple repetitive tasks. He indicated that Mr. Arnold may have difficulty tolerating stress, but Dr. Stevens took that into account in her decision and said that he would be okay in a low-stress environment with only low production standards. Dr. McCulbertson reviewed the entire record, at least the record that existed at the time of her review, and she said that Mr. Arnold could perform 1 to 3 step jobs, relate okay to supervisors and coworkers, and handle basic stress. Again, that is consistent with Dr. Stevens' assessment and the ALJ's RFC finding. Now, Dr. Hoffman indicated that Mr. Arnold would have no problems with simple tasks. He also indicated that he would only have slight problems dealing with others. He suggested, he checked a box saying that Mr. Arnold would have marked limitations in dealing with stress. But there was no opinion that he couldn't handle work in a limited stress environment. And he clearly indicated that not only was his opinion based on the lay witness statements, but on Mr. Peabody, who was counsel at the time, Mr. Peabody's representation and characterization of those statements, not even the statements themselves. So to the extent that the ALJ didn't credit the marked limitations, he had a reasonable basis for doing so. Dr. Hoffman's assessment wasn't based on reliable medical evidence. In fact, when he discussed the mental status examination, he didn't observe any difficulties dealing with stress at the time. I'd like to address Mr. Schultz's argument that Dr. Stevens completely ignored the lay witness statements. Dr. Stevens engaged in a discussion with counsel at the time of the hearing. And he asked her specifically, you have not in it, or this might have been with the ALJ, I'm not sure, you have not in any way taken into account the information provided by the witnesses or the subjective testimony. And that's on page 395. And Dr. Stevens' answer was, well, I have. I sort of listened very carefully to these very, very nice people. The problem is that it's layman's testimony and it's subjective. And she goes on later to talk about how she listened to Mr. Arnold's testimony that he could perform household chores, even though he didn't do them. She also considered the evidence, which was presented by the lay witnesses, that he maintained friendships, was cordial to his neighbors, and got along with his customers. So she was clearly thinking about the lay evidence at that point, even though she was somewhat equivocal in her response. And I think that another statement she makes on the record shows what her thought process was. When she was asked about whether he met the listing, in particular the C criteria of the listing, she said she did not consider the lay witness's description of Mr. Arnold's living arrangements and lifestyle as sufficient evidence to support his claim that he met the C criteria of the listing, because that is supposed to be based on medical evidence. What the lay witnesses were doing in this case were opining that he couldn't handle any stress, that he couldn't tolerate any frustration, that he couldn't get along with others. But when pressed for examples, they weren't able to give any. When the ALJ asked Mr. Coletta if Mr. Arnold could move things from box to box, yes, Mr. Arnold's answer initially was no, he cannot. But then He gave an example, and his example was he had trouble taking off an oil filter. Well, he did not answer the ALJ's question, and none of the witnesses in the record, besides giving an opinion that he couldn't do one thing or another, he couldn't handle a broad category of functioning such as deal with stress, could not give specific examples of those difficulties. And therefore, Dr. Stevens was saying though that testimony was subjective. It wasn't based on objective observations. And Mr. Arnold, in his brief, refers to the witnesses as people who should be given special more weight than the typical lay witness, because two of them had worked for Catholic charities and testified that they had dealt with people who had traumatic brain injuries. And the ALJ didn't really seem to give that any special weight in his decision. He certainly didn't mention it. But that's because these witnesses appeared at the hearing as neighbors, and they testified about their comings and their goings from their homes and carrying out their daily lives.
And isn't it the fact that the problem is that his neighbor's testimony does not jive or does not agree with the objective medical evidence?
That's the commissioner's position, yes.
And that's the exact fact. Isn't that true?
Yes.
Isn't it true that Mr. Arnold was earning 5 years after the accident, and for a period of 5 years, the same amount that he was earning 7 years before the accident?
Yes, that is also a factor that the ALJ considered in this case.
And isn't it a fact also that, as this court has said, rather as the appellate courts have said before, it's a lack of work history that may indicate a lack of motivation to work rather than a lack of ability?
Certainly, and that is what the ALJ indicated that he considered in this case. Not as the sole consideration, but certainly a probative consideration of whether Mr. Arnold's claims of inability to work were credible. And that Mr. Schultz also indicated that the ALJ was plainly wrong in his statements about the lay witnesses.
Did Mr. Arnold also testify that he hadn't seen a doctor in the past 11 years?
Yes, and that is also a factor that the ALJ considered. Mr. Arnold mentioned that he didn't have medical insurance, but certainly he gave no indication that he sought treatment and was rejected because of his lack of resources. Moreover, nobody recommended that he get treatment. He was seen by two doctors at the request of the Social Security Administration, and neither one of them identified him as a person who needed treatment. I see our time is up. If there are no further questions, we ask that you affirm the commissioner's decision.
Thank you, Ms. Snow. Mr. Schultz, you had some time left. 2 minutes.
On that last point, Your Honors, I think the commissioner's point actually goes to plaintiff's claim that neither of the doctors who examined Mr. Arnold recommended that he get treatment is as likely because there is no treatment for brain injury. Once you have your injury and you go through your initial rehabilitation, there's no evidence on this record that there's any treatment that could have helped Mr. Arnold get any
better. But he has been able to work, hasn't he? And he was earning as much before the accident. He's earning as much after the accident as he earned before.
Not quite as much. And the only point I would make is,
what's the difference?
Well, he earned a couple thousand dollars more before the accident, but he was only 25 years old at the time of the accident.
Couldn't that also be a lack of his motivation? You know, get some of that free government money?
Well, it could be, except in this case, Your Honor, he was 25 at the time of his accident.
Right.
And he didn't, he went many, many years without applying for Social Security benefits.
But your problem is that you don't have any medical evidence in the past 11 years to support his theory. Your theory was that he has these frequent outbursts And on the other hand, his own neighbors, see, they aren't frequent.
Well, I wasn't primarily relying on the frequent outbursts, but we were primarily relying on the inability to sustain attention to tasks.
Well, it says angry outbursts. Counsel's report to him that Arnold was prone to angry outbursts.
Well, that's one of the things that Dr. Hoffman concluded. That's correct, Your Honor.
And there were very few of them, according to his neighbors.
That's correct. In terms of the outbursts, there weren't that many. Again, it was more the inability to sustain tasks. I would just like to point out the commissioner argued concerning the listing. We did not argue before this court that the claimant met a listing of impairments. And finally, if the court looks at pages 388, 395, and 396 of the record for Dr. Stevens' testimony, I believe it shows that, in fact, she was clear that she did not consider the witness testimony in reaching her conclusions. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Case, thank you, and thanks to all counsel. And the case will be taken under advisement.